This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from the Tantalk Radio Network studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. Well, I have a fantastic guest for us today. Wow, she's going to help all of us. Polly Bauer is the author of Credit Intelligence, Boosting Your Credit Smarts. And she knows what she is talking about because she was the CEO of Home Shopping Network, Credit Corporation, and she knows all about shopping. So, wow, what more can you ask for? Hi, Polly.
Good morning.
Okay, great. Well, I noticed after your name you have CPCS. What does that mean? Means you know something about money?
It means I'm a professional speaker.
Okay, a professional speaker about money. Okay. So how many years were you with Home Shopping Network?
I was with Home Shopping Network for 12 glorious years.
12 glorious years. And so you saw a lot of financial goings on there, right? And you kept track of everything.
Well, you know, on the credit side, yes.
On the credit side. Okay, so she knows what she's talking about. And here we have this wonderful book. It's got a... I love the cover, actually. It's very good. She's got a brain made out of money. Well, we wish all of our brains were made out of money. So tell us, how did you get involved in writing a book on how to save us from making the mistakes that you've made?
Well, I'll tell you, Patsy, the one joy that I have that I so much in my life and really, really have fun with is my best friend. And we shop together. We've been in the credit industry together for 50 years. She's a marketing professional, worked for MasterCard. And, of course, I have a black belt in shopping, and I have a credit background. So what a perfect combination. But the two of us together would shop and notice how consumers, people that were buying, were making decisions and using credit that were going to have negative impact on them in the future. We talked about it for many years, and then we decided to write a book.
Well, this is a perfect time of the year for everyone to get this book because people do max out at this time of the year, that's for sure. And for writers, of course, it's always a problem. Money is always a problem because there are always expenses. People don't understand that when you're a writer, you're involved in so many things, whether it's traveling to events, to book signings, to having to get publicity or whatever. Money just has to be spent, and it's very difficult to not put it on your credit card. But the best idea is not to do it.
Absolutely. Cash is king.
That's it. So what are some of your I love the first story in your book because it's so apropos to me. You went shopping to Stein Mart, which I love shopping in Stein Mart. They should be my sponsor, and then they could give me a big discount because I love shopping in Stein Mart. I'm wearing Stein Mart today because I love shopping in Stein Mart, and it's hard to resist.
It is.
Oh, you go in there, and they have such beautiful things.
Beautiful displays, beautiful product.
Okay, so you and Mava were in Stein Mart. What happened?
We were in Stein Mart together, and we had an event that came up at last minute. And you know, sometimes women think, oh, I have to go to a new event with something new.
Sure.
And we were rushing to pick out the right piece and the right shoes. And I thought, wait a minute. Why do we need these products? And of course, we got ready to check out. Number one, just like McDonald's asks you if you want fries, number one thing at checkout, the cashier says, well, if you apply for a card today, we'll give you 20% off.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Well, but we stopped and thought for just a minute. We're buying something we don't need. We're buying it in a hurry because we think we need something new. And we even considered for just a moment to apply for a new credit card, which we both were wise enough to know every time you apply for a card, it drops your credit score. So it has an impact later on how you spend your money and how far your money will stretch. It was fun in Steinmark to do that together till we both went, wait a minute, we know better. We're seasoned shoppers. And it was great that Steinmark had that offer, but we both said no thank you and had a great laugh when we left the store.
Well, what is one of the reasons you should not get a store credit card particularly?
Well, it's not that you shouldn't get a store credit card, but don't do it on an impulse. Don't do it for a deal of like 20% off what you just purchased. If you figure out your 20% off, it's probably not much of a savings. And are you willing to drop your credit score 20 to 30 points for that card that you don't need? You know, there's no real thing as a free lunch, especially when it comes to credit.
So do you think people should limit the number of credit cards they have in general? Do people have too many credit cards?
The average family, individuals in a family have 7 to 7.5 cards. I think you need to look to see what your needs are. You should have major credit cards, at least one, in case you would have an emergency and need to use that. Store credit cards, if they give you great value, but decide which stores you're really going to use. Having a wallet full of cards is not the wisest thing to do. A gasoline card if you're traveling, possibly. And then always start thinking about rewards cards. I don't know about you, but I get 10 offers a day in the mail, plus telephone calls asking me to apply for credit. And sometimes I like to say, you know, I don't realize how many cards I have now and how they're going to impact me. Why would I want more? Why would I want more cards? So, you know, carrying a lot of cards is not necessary. But you have to decide what categories of cards that you need.
Yeah, there was a time in my life when I had lots of credit cards. And it's funny, when I lived overseas, we didn't have any credit cards except American Express. There was no sense having anything else. And then when we came back to America, and, you know, right away I got some really great credit cards, like Saks Fifth Avenue and all of those cards. And it was really nice. I had so many, and I spent so much, and I was so sorry. And now I'm much more level-headed, and I'm sure you wouldn't approve. I don't even go out of the house with all of my credit cards. I just don't do it. I just keep a few necessary ones.
Well, and the rule of thumb is credit is like you keep your oldest friends your best friends. You keep your oldest cards your best cards because they give you the best rating on your credit score. They show long-term payments. They show that you're responsible. So just because there's a new card or a new deal doesn't mean that it's the best for you.
Well, let's talk about, you mentioned that it lowers your credit rating. What's the sort of average credit rating? What's the best, the optimal credit rating for those people who don't know? Because sometimes people like to just stick their head in the sand. You see these ads on TV and they say, check your credit rating. And I'm not sure about doing any of those things, but what's the perfect credit rating?
Well, it would be in the 820s up. So the high 800s, mid to high 800s.
And can you go up? Great. You can go up from 800?
You can go up from 800, yes.
Are there people with 1,000?
No.
No.
No, it's in the 800 scores.
Not even Donald Trump doesn't have 1,000?
I don't have any idea what his score is.
Well, somebody should have 1,000. That's a nice round number.
Right.
Okay.
But it's very good advice for you to check your credit score for two or three reasons. Number one, someone can be accessing your credit and you're not aware. And if people put their head in the sand because they're afraid of what they might see or it will be something that they don't want to face, that's not a wise way to manage your money or to manage your credit. There's free services. Credit Karma has them. Discover Card has them, where you can check your score. Right now, it's very important that we check our scores during the holiday time because there are some activities going on where some of the banks are selling some of old loans and they're getting listed on your card or on your credit score more than once, and that can drop your numbers. I look at it this way. My credit bureau is supposed to be a reflection of who I am, but I know the value of my good name, and I need to take responsibility to check my credit bureau, make sure that it's correct, and if it's not correct, do something about it.
And checking your credit score, does that mark you down?
No.
I had heard that you lose points if you check
not if you check your own. No, not at all.
Okay. Okay, so that's good advice. So what's the average American's credit score?
About 740, 750, yeah.
And that's good.
That's very good.
Yeah.
That's very good.
And And then I could ask a few writers what their average credit score is. It's not that. It's not that, because it's very difficult, you know, for writers. As I said, they have expenses, and they don't always make a lot of money, mm-hmm. at least when they start off. Now, if you're very lucky and you get a New York Times bestseller, you don't have to worry, but it is a problem. So what when somebody like finds out that their credit score is not good, they can get it back, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, this is your life, your name, your history. So if you find something wrong on your credit bureau, there are lists online as well as where you got that report. It will tell you if you have a dispute, this is who you contact, this is how you contact. There are forms that you can fill out that you dispute a charge. It may not be yours. It could have come in from someone else by mistake. You got to remember that credit bureaus are run by human beings, and human beings make mistakes. So I need to take responsibility for my score. And if I want to make it higher, there's information in Credit Intelligence as to how you can raise your credit score. There's information online as to how you can get the score higher. One of the things that's very important for people to understand is you're not your credit score. You are a gifted, talented individual who just happens to have a credit score. And you may be someone who is a phenomenal writer but not good with finance. That doesn't mean you're not one of the best. It just means it's an area for you to learn.
It means don't hit your head against the wall.
Exactly.
Just pay attention. Get this book, Credit Intelligence, because what's really cool, I really love in this book, and I was joking, but you know, she has, after every every chapter, there are two blank pages here, and where you can, it's called My Credit Intelligence Notes, and you can write down your what you've learned or what you need to think about from that chapter. So I think it's exactly what Polly's saying, that you have to take charge,
right?
And being able to face facts,
yes,
and not put money on your credit cards. So, what kind of things shouldn't people put on their credit cards?
Well, it's not what they shouldn't put on their credit card. It's ask yourself: could you pay it off in cash if you needed to, right away? So, when you decide, am I going to pay cash for this, or am I going to put it on my credit? There's two or three questions I ask. Number one: do I have the cash readily available that I could pay it off if I needed to? Am I trying to spend money I don't have yet? Well, am I thinking, well, I'll put this on a card now because I have a commission coming? That's not a good decision. So when you look at putting something on a credit card or making a transaction on a credit card, always think about what's the worst that could happen and what's the best that could happen. Could I make a minimum payment? What if I didn't get my commission check this month? Would I be able to do that? So you need to really, really consider, do I need this? This is the holiday time, and this is when people do a lot of emotional shopping. And one of the things that I teach some of my students are, if you see it and your heart's racing and you think you really need it, stop, go outside, take a deep breath, and ask yourself, how am I going to feel tomorrow? Am I going to feel any guilt or emotion over buying this? Is this just a fleeting moment of joy that's happening for me? There's an entire section in Credit Intelligence about emotions and how emotions impact our buying. And I have to tell you, I've been in the credit industry over 40 years, and I had a rude awakening when we did the research on the emotional chapter, because I got to identify that, yes, I shop every day for goods or services. Most consumers do. But I had a bad habit that I was embarrassed, because I was in the credit industry, that I didn't want to share with anyone.
Uh-oh, what is that?
And my habit was, if I had a really great day and I wanted to celebrate, I bought phenomenal shoes, usually at Stein Mart, and
yes,
they made me feel great.
Yes.
And that was absolutely wonderful. But if I was sad, or if I had my feelings hurt, or if I had to work long hours, I was doing the same thing. I was buying phenomenal shoes to comfort myself. When we did the research on that chapter about emotions, it was an eye-opener for me. And I realized, hey, I had a habit I was embarrassed about. And you know what? I told my husband about it this morning on the way here to the radio show, and he said, "What? How many years did you do that?" I said, "I have to be honest with you, Frank. I'm going down to talk to Patsy, and I'm going to tell her about my habit called freezer shoes." And he said, "I don't understand any of this." I said, "Frank, Maeve and I would shop all over the country, and then I'd feel guilty. Oh, did I need those shoes? Should I take those shoes back? Did I put it on credit? Did I use cash?" Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll drive into the driveway. I'll go into the garage. I'll put the shoes in the freezer. I'll leave them there for about 4 days, and then I'll sneak them into my closet. Then when my husband says to me, "Are those new?" I say, "Oh, heavens, no. They've been out in the garage." I didn't realize that other women didn't do that.
Oh,
and that was an emotional.
Oh, I didn't have the freezer, but I've done that.
Oh, good for you.
Oh, forget it.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh, I've done that.
So the section on emotions in the book is one of the best. And we did a lot of research on how we buy, what emotions impact us, how the weather impacts us. Now, we're lucky. We're in a beautiful area in Clearwater. So we have the sunshine and all of the gorgeous foliage. And here we're happy. I mean, we're happy a lot.
Yeah.
But if we have like 3 or 4 days of rain, I notice my mood changes. The weather can impact my shopping patterns. My conversation with my husband in the morning can impact my shopping patterns. If I've had a disagreement with somebody, that impacts my shopping patterns. I had no idea till we did this research that how emotions impact how I spend my money. So that is my favorite chapter on emotions.
Okay, and I know a lot of writers who, when they finish a chapter of their book, they say, "Oh, now I've done this and I deserve a treat."
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, so now, in your book, you mentioned about different kinds of credit cards.
Yes.
Some are better than others?
Well, there are different types of credit cards. Right now, we're seeing a lot of advertisement for rewards cards. And what I tell folks
What are those exactly?
Well, rewards,
I never get rewards. I don't know if I don't. I think I have a card that says I get rewards, but I don't know where they are. So, I don't.
Okay. So I know you've seen the commercial. There was a commercial for, I think it was for Capital One, where you would see folks that say, "Today I took my mother out shopping and I used my rewards. Tomorrow I'm taking my wife to a hotel and I'm using my rewards. Next week I'm taking my son to a ball game and I'm using my rewards." There are many great rewards cards. And what that means is so much money of what you spend on that card is assigned a point system. And those points go over into a little queue for you so that you can use them for airline miles, you can use them for hotels. But what I want people to understand is there really is no free lunch. Those rewards are not being paid for by the bank. They're being paid for by the merchant. So if I was selling my book as a merchant, which I do, and somebody gives me a rewards card, I have to pay more to the credit card companies to take that card. It costs me more to accept that rewards card than it does to accept a card without rewards. Rewards are not bad. Rewards are great. But only go for the cards that have rewards you're going to lose. Thousands and thousands of air miles every single year are never used because people are 5,000 short or 7,000 short, or when they want to fly, there are no seats available. There are commercials out about that now. I have all these points, but I can't get an airline seat because I can't use my points during that time. So think about the merchant when you're using a card. Do you want the merchant to pay more for the product they're selling you? And some of those merchants, it really hits their bottom line very, very hard.
So it's a good idea, I think, if you have one of those cards that you don't use it in a small business, perhaps, where they
Absolutely.
Really feel it, or a small restaurant, your neighborhood restaurant, where
Right.
you might be eating a couple times a week.
Mm-hmm.
Use it in one of the big department stores where they can,
Certainly.
You know.
And, you know, many people use their rewards. They travel with their rewards. They take their families on vacation with rewards. I took my mother out for her 70th birthday on a trip with my rewards. But I'm very conscious about what card I use, what size merchant I use it in, and am I going to use those rewards before they expire? That's
yeah,
important.
I just realized that I do have a rewards card, but I never looked to see what rewards I have. So I think maybe I better.
You might want to do that.
Maybe I can go and buy some shoes at Stein Mart.
Yes, yes.
Because there's a new Stein Mart, you know, the new one. Did you see the, there's yes. a new one down on Seminole. And yes, well, oh boy, now I'm excited. I have to rush home and check that rewards card. I might actually have some rewards there because I don't do that anymore. The shoe thing is quite. I don't think you are the only one who has done that.
Oh, thank you.
You are the only one clever enough to have a freezer. I mean, that's smart. I would sometimes shove them in the back, in the what I call the boot in the trunk right. of the car and leave them there for quite a while and then bring them into the house.
Sure.
So yeah. Oh yeah. It's quite. I think it's quite common.
And now, we remember there are many different kinds of cards. There's the rewards cards we talked about, yeah. but there are also credit cards and debit cards. And a credit card has a line of credit that's assigned to you from the bank and gets reported to your credit bureau. And it says, we believe that you are able to spend this amount of money and we're okay with that. And that's on a credit card and that gets reported every time you make a payment or make a charge. It goes on your credit bureau. And then especially now, more and more people are using debit cards because a debit card comes directly out of a checking account or directly out of a savings account, and they don't want to go into debt. They want to be able to know what they've spent, and they want to be able to see it immediately and know what their balances are.
And, yeah, I prefer debit cards myself now. It's just too much of a hassle to worry about not paying the credit card and having those terrible charges that they mm-hmm. they make. So what happens if you know, people don't pay on their credit card in time and they get a charge? Then what happens?
Well, a few things happen. Number one, if you pay late, sometimes there's a grace period for just a couple days. But if you consistently pay late, it drops your credit score, which impacts how you spend your money in the future. You can have an over-limit fee that can be added. You can have a late fee that can be added. And I see this a lot with college students. They get a small card for $300 or $500. They have no idea that they've run it up in one trip to the bookstore to get their textbooks, or they took their friend out for pizza, and then they get the bill, or the parents get the bill, and they go, wow, how did they go through that amount of money in that short a period of time? Well, what happens if they miss the payment time? Is now you've got another fee that adds on top of that. It takes you over your limit, so that has a negative reporting to you. And all of a sudden, that $20 payment you needed to make is now $90. So, you know, be cautious. If there something happens to human beings, sometimes we miss a date or something doesn't get paid right on time, immediately take care of it. You don't have to pay your credit cards off in full every month, but you do have to make the minimum payment on your card to keep your credit in good standing.
Well, luckily, my son learned, probably from me, that it's not good to have credit cards you can't pay on time. And he uses a debit card, which is so much nicer, because then all he has to do is call mommy and say, could you add a little money? And they've made it so convenient that I can transfer money directly. It used to be in the old days when I was young and I wanted money. I never could have gotten it in the first place. But if my father had to send it, it would have had to go through American Express or something strange like that. But I recommend that highly for college students. Let them have a debit card, and then you fill it up when it comes to an emergency for them.
Absolutely. And as they, you know, as they graduate,
and they learn,
the
and
world,
they learn.
Yes.
And then boy, when it's their own money, then they start learning. Then,
it's a very different story, isn't
yeah, then,
it? Yes.
Then they don't have the same problem. So it's good training. So, there's so many sections of this book. It's, as I said, I love the little blank two pages in there to fill it in. And one of the things, of course, you talk about is stress.
Right.
And stress, you know, well, for writers, stress is, there's so much stress. Stress of trying to find enough time to write. Then when, if you are lucky enough to have a book deal, stress to meet deadlines and stress to meet all those self-imposed deadlines that we create for ourselves. that you don't need extra stress caused by money.
Right. Yeah, financial stress is very, very difficult. Very difficult on the human body, very difficult on your mind, because your mind goes to, oh my goodness, I've got to make X amount of dollars. That puts more stress on you. Or I have a payment that's going to be late. I don't know where it's going to come from. And there are many reports, and there's some information on the book about how financial stress and credit card debt impact your health, impact your blood pressure, impact your abilities to relax. And, of course, being a writer, having that creativity, it needs to be able to flow easily. So eliminating payment stress, eliminating credit card debt, if you can. There's information and tips in the book. We've got 85 ideas in the back of some things you can do to just manage your money a little better. Easy things that anyone can do.
Well, what are some of those? Tell us, not all 85, we don't have time, but tell us some of the easy things that people can do to relieve the stress of spending too much money.
Right. Well, first of all, ask yourself, do I need this? Am I buying this just because it's something that's going to make me feel good right now? And if you get home or you're driving and you say, I wish I hadn't bought that, turn around and return it.
Oh.
You know, lots of people I interview say, oh, I have all these things that I bought, but I'm just embarrassed to return it. Why? It's your money. It's your purchase. And most retailers will be happy to take it back. You haven't altered it in any way. So, you know, think about, if you don't need it, don't beat yourself up. Just return it back and let that money go back into your account. Think about what you're going to buy. Always have a budget so you have an idea of what you're going to be responsible for over the next month. When you're dealing in the credit world, if you have something on your bill you don't understand, immediately dispute it. There should be a telephone number on there for you to call so you can say, I don't recognize this purchase. It may not have been yours. I just had a case a week ago where Google hit my account 9 times in one day for a service that I use when I'm writing. And I look at my statements as soon as they come. Now, I'm in the credit industry. A lot of people just put them in a drawer or they put them away to let their accountant make the payment. That's your money that's on there. So take responsibility to see what's on it and know what you're responsible for. If it's not yours, take care of it. Take care of it right away.
Now, what happens if you get to the position that you have just behind everything you have collectors coming after you? What should you do?
Well, first of all, don't hide. Be honest. It happens in everyone's life. People get behind on things. Be honest with them ahead of time. You can make arrangements to make payments. There may be cases where you can pay off a certain percentage, or you can say, look, I can't pay that $1,000, but I can pay $100 of it if you'll work with me. And it doesn't completely come off your credit bureau score if you're paying just a few cents on the dollar. It does resolve the debt. It does report differently to the bureau. But when you do that, you're going to get a sweet little note in the mail from the IRS at the end of the year that says, well, technically, you need to pay us taxes on that $900 that we consider that you received. Well, you didn't receive it. It was a debt that was forgiven. But be prepared. Put money back for your taxes, because you're going to get billed by the IRS for anything you've taken a settlement on.
Yeah, one of my favorite books is Confessions of a Shopaholic.
Yes.
I love that book, and I love that movie. And it's so cute, because one of the things is I'm half Finnish. So in that movie, of course, she avoids a lot of things by pretending that she's speaking Finnish. Now, in my case, I can actually do it. I can say, who is that baby? And going is a mena. And I could drive bill collectors crazy too. But it doesn't really work.
No, it doesn't.
No, you can't pretend that you don't understand them.
Of course not.
That you only speak Finnish.
Oh, no. No, I don't think that that works. I don't think that works.
And it doesn't work saying you only speak Swahili.
No. You know, remember, they're doing their job. And their job, I don't think I would want their job. Their job is to call you when you've probably had a very difficult situation, or could have had a family loss or a job loss or a medical situation.
Or you saw those beautiful shoes
right.
that they have.
Oh,
with the ones with the sparkles
yes.
on them. Oh, look, I can't. If they put sparkles on shoes, I think that's almost criminal, because how can you resist?
You can't.
You can't.
You can't.
Oh, my gosh. And especially if they have that little bow, you know, with a little gold mm-hmm. bow. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Oh. So,
you know, I don't know that anything in the world isn't so bad that a good pair of shoes won't help.
That's true.
But be honest with the bill collectors and tell them, look, I have this amount of money. I'm working with these other folks. Dave Ramsey has a great book about paying. He doesn't like credit cards. And I love teasing because I came from the credit industry, but he's got a great book that talks about, you know, how you can manage when you're way over your head in debt. But I found if you're honest with the folks and you say, look, this is what I have, this is what I'm working on, how can you work with me? They are so pleased that you're willing to talk to them and willing to make some kind of an arrangement.
And isn't it amazing? I should just comment that isn't it amazing that the IRS is so efficient when it comes to things like that? I mean, there we see efficiency on a level mm-hmm. that we see in no other segment of the government. But boy, when you get something like that relieved of a something that you owed, they're very efficient about that.
Absolutely.
It's strange. It's strange. You have to wonder about their minds. But anyway, I love all you IRS people. As a matter of fact, I just interviewed a former IRS agent. She won't admit to it, but her main character is an IRS agent, Rita Moreau, who wrote this fantastic book, well, a series of books about a character who was a former IRS agent. So I see the fun and joy in the life of an IRS agent. So I shouldn't tease them or they'll come after me. And I don't have any thing that I'm having canceled, so they don't have to worry about that. Okay, so we're going to be honest with those people, and we're going to just face up to facts.
Right. You know, Patsy, I've had a couple folks say to me, gosh, Polly, I'd love to read the book, but I get really sad and down when I'm talking about credit. And I said, listen, this is a fun book.
Oh, it is fun.
This book
because
has
you talk
fun
about your
stories.
Friend, Maeve. That's what I love about it. I mean, exactly what I was saying. I love that where Maeve says, my shoulders and back are all knotted up with stress. They're killing me. And you go, okay, let's talk about this. She sounds like a hoot.
She is a hoot. She is a brilliant, brilliant marketing person. She ran global marketing for MasterCard. I'm so blessed to have her in my life. And she's so much fun.
I do have to say that these stories are fun, and they're, you know, as much as we don't like the subject, Polly here has written a book that really makes it interesting. It's eye-opening, and with all the little stories about her occasional excesses, we shall say. I didn't see that Freeze's story in there, but now that we all know it, and we will all contemplate that story, it's a really, really fun book. I really enjoy it, and it's a perfect book for you to read and for my listeners to get this book. It's called Credit Intelligence: Boosting Your Credit Smarts, and it's written by Polly Bauer, A. Bauer, and Maeve K. Heffler. And I'm sure it's available on Amazon.
It's available on Amazon,
and,
yes.
And it's just a great book. Do you have a website, too, that people can go to or not?
Yes. We have a new credit intelligence website starting, but I also have my website, which is pollyabauer, pollyabauer.com.
Okay. And now you're not yet helping individuals with their credit problems. Right?
Right. We will be doing some webinars. It'll be available online. We'll be doing some blogs, hopefully some more radio interviews where folks can call in and ask questions and we can give them some general guidance.
Okay. That's wonderful because it is something that is needed. People need to know about this. And it's just when you have a fun little book like this with that's so helpful, I think. It's just, I think it's a great gift, too. And for all of you people out there with kids in college, I know I'm going to share this book with my son because he's already much smarter about credit than I am because of the fact that he saw what I went through. And he was quite aware, by the way, that I snuck shoes in because he was often with me on those shopping trips. And so he knew about that little sneakiness of his mother. And so Oh, I love this chapter where you have a whole bunch of danger, danger, danger. I like that.
Yes.
Danger. One click. Buy now buttons. Are those dangerous?
Yes. Think about shopping right now. Everybody wants something fast. It's convenient. They want to go on Amazon. They want to buy online. Buying online is the rage, and it's the rage, and it's wonderful, and it's easy. But danger, danger. Look at the site that you're buying from. Make sure it is truly a site that you recognize. Make sure it's got some security notes that are up there. And if a banner comes by and says, click on it and buy it now, stop, breathe, and think about it.
Okay. Well, that is good advice from Polly Bauer. I want to thank you again for coming in today.
My pleasure.
And I will, I'm going to put this up on my archive page up right at the top so that everybody can see it. I'll also put this interview because I think it's a wonderful interview for this time of the year, and I'll have that up tomorrow. And I want everyone to go and see my archive page at radio-joyonpaper.com. And I have interviews with all of your favorite authors like David Baldacci, Lise Wheel, of course, Rita Moreau, the writer of Feisty Nuns, and so many other wonderful authors. So you can hear their interviews. And I just, again, Polly, thanks for coming in, and
we will
keep you in mind during this holiday season.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with the Z, and I'm back, and my next interview is with Matt Haig, the author of A Boy Called Christmas. It's a book out just in time for this season, and I think you will enjoy hearing from Matt about how he found out about where Santa came from. Hi. Well, I'm so happy to welcome you to the program, Matt Haig. Because you have a great new book out, and it's just in time for this season, because it is A Boy Called Christmas.
That's right, A Boy Called Christmas. And, I suppose it's as Christmassy as you can get, I suppose, as it's the origin story of Santa Claus, and, I'm very excited about it.
Well, I'm so excited to talk to you, and I was so happy to hear that you haven't lost your accent. Where are you calling from? Are you calling from New York or England?
I'm calling all the way across the Atlantic from England, yes.
That's wonderful, because I lived there for quite a few years in Sonning, near Henley.
Oh, okay, yes. Yeah.
And so I miss the accent.
Yes, I still definitely have the accent. So English people never really know which part of England I'm from because I've lived in the north and the south. But yeah.
Okay. Well, it's always very pleasant to my ear.
And oh, good.
It was so funny when I started this book. Well, right away I liked it because it's set in Finland, and I'm half Finnish. And,
oh, are you?
Yes. Oh. And I'm from the, in America, we have the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which is, yeah. we call it mini Finland.
Oh, right, because of the landscape.
Oh, yes, the landscape, and half the people are Finnish. So,
oh, really?
And so I related to the story right away, and it was very funny that when you talk about when the story opens, and we find out that the story is about a boy named Nicholas who has as his only doll a turnip head. Well, you know, that wasn't far from my childhood.
Oh, really?
I mean,
oh dear.
I mean, we were about that poor, and of turnips were plentiful, and I'm sure we spent as much time drawing heads on turnips as we did on pumpkins. So,
really? Did you?
Oh, yeah, it's quite funny. So I thought, oh wow. So how did you come out with this story?
Well, like some lot of stories, a lot of things, they start with a question, and it was my son, actually, my son Lucas, a couple of years ago. Towards Christmas time, he asked me whether Santa, or as he says, Father Christmas, whether Father Christmas was ever a child. And I said, oh, yes, I think he must have been. And then he said, oh, what was he like as a child? And that second question stumped me a little bit. And I thought, oh, this would be a good story. So I went on Google and saw how many people had done this story before. And no one has done this as a novel before. So I thought, oh, my goodness, this is a golden opportunity. And, yeah, that was the start of it, basically.
Well, that's wonderful, and now he's going to be so proud that not only is he paying the family bills, he's going to be paying for his own university and for lots of things for the rest of his life.
I've had to increase his pocket money.
I was going to say that, absolutely. He deserves it because not only is it a book, it's going to be a film. My goodness.
I know, it's all very exciting. I had a meeting with the film people last week, and yes, it's looking very, very positive. Obviously, it hasn't been made yet, so you have to be a bit tentative. But yes, they've got the script ready, they've got a director excited, they've got two companies, one of them Studio Canal, which is the biggest European studio, and yes, they want to get it started next year, so it is all exciting.
Well, it is exciting. So tell us a little bit how you developed Nicholas, of course, in Finland. So for me, it's a real thrill. Tell us a little bit about Nicholas.
Well, in a way, I try to imagine the opposite of Santa. You know, we think of Santa as this very happy, jolly, larger than life, literally and metaphorically, character, very colourful. I thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting if we actually gave him quite a miserable childhood at the start and actually found a way for him to still be happy and to still find some optimism? And it was sort of, so it's about his journey from, as I say, just having a turnip doll as his only toy, and he's not a indulged child. There's obviously no Santa Claus to come for him, and he lives with his single parent father, and then his father goes off on a quest, and then his father doesn't come back, so he's parentless, and he has to go off and find his father. And yes, the quest takes him further into the north, further into the cold and the mountains, and that's where he meets the reindeer, that's where he meets the elves. And even the elves aren't the happy creatures he's imagined. Even the elves are a little bit different and a little bit darker than his first imagined. So it's about how, I suppose the story is really about how you can find hope and happiness in the least unlikely places, and how optimism and believing in magic pays off in the end.
And with your characters that you developed that go along with it, you know, from trolls to a little mouse. Well, besides the fact that they're perfect for film, they were very, very, you know, well-developed characters in themselves.
Oh, thank you. I had fun writing them, and I thought, yeah, it'd be quite fun to have, you know, because there's a scene where he's actually thrown into elf jail, into elf prison, and so it's the total opposite of what you think of the elves are like, but actually he finds the goodness in there. So I like the idea of uncovering a sort of hidden goodness that's not always on the surface. And I suppose the most fun character to write was a character called the Truth Pixie, this pixie who's actually quite mischievous. But her weakness, her Achilles heel, is she cannot help but tell the truth. If you ask her a question, she will have to tell you the absolute honest answer. But even if she's doing something terrible, she has to admit it. So even though she doesn't have a very big role in the book, it was doing a lot of little cameo characters that were the most interesting.
Actually, you used her before, right?
Yes. I used her in a book called Shadowforest, although in Shadowforest she was a he, so there's a little bit of a gender switch. But I've written a sequel to A Boy Called Christmas called The Girl Who Saved Christmas, which won't be out in America until next Christmas. But yes, the Truth Pixie's in that too.
There's a little bit of... I won't say dark, but there's a little bit more... Well, I don't know, a little bit dark, in a way. How do we explain the head blowing up?
Oh, the head exploding.
Yes.
There's this troll. This is the bit, because I often go around schools and do events for lots of children, and the bit they always like being read aloud is the part in the prison, because of an exploding troll head, basically. And so this troll is this poisonous magical herb which makes troll heads explode. So yes, there's a bit of darkness and a bit of disgustingness which kids seem to enjoy. But yes, I've hopefully got away with it by making it quite a positive message and quite a positive story. I think there's a certain responsibility to do that, certainly if you're writing for children. And yeah, so I've had my fun, I've created lots of nasty characters and lots of horrible going on. There is, I think, by my standards, quite an old-fashioned, uplifting kind of story, hopefully.
Oh, definitely. It's the type of book that, at the end, you really feel that power of, you know, telling people that life can be good, there are lots of hope, and... I think that's, you know, the positive message that you bring and definitely at the end of the book. So,
yeah.
You know, you were inspired by your son, of course, and just in general by your own childhood. Did you have this kind of thing in your childhood where
Christmas as a child. My childhood wasn't like universally happy. There was some bad years, and we moved house, and I didn't settle into a new school very well, and I was a bit of an outsider in my sort of early teens and stuff. But Christmas was always the thing that, you know, no matter what, Christmas was always for me a good time of year. It was away from school, just with the people you love. It just helped you believe in magic again, made you feel really young again. And so Christmas, I think, has always been a comfort for me. I know a lot of people can sort of start to moan about Christmas and all the shopping they've got to do and everything, but it's still, for me, it's always my sort of escapist time of year, which I find still has a certain magic, even though I'm now 41 years of age. It still makes me feel about 8.
So are you going to have a white Christmas over there?
I don't know. We rarely do, actually. I think the idea of a British white Christmas is like Charles Dickens. I think when Charles Dickens was a boy, for the first 8 years of his life, it snowed every single year in London at Christmas. So he, in all his books, there's like a white Christmas. So we have this, we always want a white Christmas, but I think we had one about 5 years ago, but we haven't had one since. And actually today, the sun is out and it's actually quite mild, but you never know. It's always possible, but not always probable.
No, I know. I when I was living in England and I was waiting for Christmas, and I thought the first year I thought, oh, it's going to be a white. It wasn't a white Christmas. For Christmas, finally, I gave up on white Christmases in England. I took off for Austria.
Yes, well, that's more guaranteed. You're more likely to get a wet Christmas than England. You'll get a rainy Christmas quite often, but White one, yeah, few and far between.
Well, you know, I just want to thank you so much for joining me today because I just love talking to anyone in England. And I want to say, you know, it's so important that we, as writers and as people who promote books, that we think about the kind of joy that we can bring into children's lives. And I think with your book, you know, you have this opportunity here that you've opened up, you know, for kids who might not sort of, there's so many Christmas stories that are, I would use the word schmaltzy, that they get turned off by them. Whereas this story, you have created an entire world, and it's very, in many ways, it's very magical. And I can imagine how it's going to be, on film. But I did like the idea that, you know, Nicholas's father is a woodcutter, but he's not always perfect. And he even, you know, he's lost some fingers. And, you know, so there's always this touch of reality in your book that I think helps to sort of set the tone.
Oh, good. I'm glad you think so. And that was definitely my intention, to have a bit of darkness in there, but also create the magic out of that.
Well, I think you've succeeded, and I hope that the next book is what?
The next book is The Girl, because I've got a daughter as well, so I couldn't just leave her out. The Girl who Saved Christmas. And then there's going to be one more after that.
Wow, this is going to be fantastic. So I'm going to have you back on next year at around the same time, and we'll talk about The Girl Who Saved Christmas, and by then all of the kids will be having a nice little increase in their pocket money.
Yeah,
this is fantastic. So congratulations on the success of this book and of all your other books, and I know that the movie's going to be great too. So I just want to thank you so much. And do you have a website that people could go to?
MattHaig.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook as Matt Haig, HAIG, and I spend too much time on Twitter, so I can normally be found there. But yeah.
Okay, because my listeners always like to go and follow up and find out more about the authors that I interview. So it's so good that I'm sure they'll all be coming to your site, and I hope they will all buy your book. And it's so reasonably priced. Here in America, it's just $10. I mean,
it's
great.
No, amazing.
It's amazing price.
And more expensive over here. So, yeah, it's good value.
Yes, they really priced it just right for the season. And I think, you know, it's a perfect gift for people to buy for their children and buy an extra one. I always tell people, if you have money, buy an extra one and donate it to a local charity. Because, you know, all those kids need books as well as everybody else. So
yeah, no, totally.
Okay. So anyway, Matt, thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to talking to you next year, just around
the
same time.
Let's set a date. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.
WTAN, Clearwater, Tampa Bay. WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR, Zephyr Hills, Tampa Bay. Listen.
It's time for the Thursday edition of Canada Calling, the news from home for vacationing Canadians throughout Florida. This is Prior Smith speaking from Toronto. Thanks for joining us. Well, if you have friends or relatives on the southern BC mainland or Vancouver Island, you'll want to know they're coping with wintry weather this week, something they're not accustomed to. Daytime highs the last couple of days have been around the freezing mark, and they've had to contend with some snow and icy roads. While a cold snap grips much of Alberta and Saskatchewan, across eastern Canada today and for the next 4 days, the forecast calls for temperatures around freezing and a little snow each day. You know, when it comes to federal government wasteful spending, it's always a question of how much. One of the latest dandies? Documents tabled in the House of Commons this week show the Fed spent more than $400,000 renovating a 2-year-old office building in downtown Ottawa, and included in the renovations? $5,000 of your tax money and mine spent on 56 coat hooks in the washrooms. NDP critic Daniel Blakey noted, and I quote,